Well, hello everybody, it's 2300 Zulu, and of course that means it's time for the TIN here in South Cars. We'll get things going after we do a little bit of housekeeping. This is STARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the STARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This STARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by KB8ZGL, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so you may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at scarsvoip.com. Let me just buy a nickel. I am your net control for this session. My call is KC2GA. My name is Gary, and I'm located in Syracuse's beautiful Outer Comstock section. We have about 81 degrees right now outside, and I'm sitting here overlooking the absolutely wonderful tree of life outside the window here. Now, prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. Nothing heard. Is anybody celebrating a birthday this week? Well, nobody's getting older, and that's a good thing. So we'll get things going here. This is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. We advise all stations connected that this net might be recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. All stations participating will be a part of that recording. Okay, we got that out of the way. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's TIN. Now, tonight, it's Ask an Elmer. What's that all about? Well, we get together around a couple of technically related topics, and then we throw the net open to general discussion of your technical problems or comments. It's always a great time when we do this. And tonight, I'll be joined by David, KB9EWG, and Fred, K2HA, and, of course, the infamous N1, SEZ, Paul, in Danbury, Connecticut. Great to have you here tonight. It was a nice surprise. So with that going on right now, let's introduce the partners in crime that are going to be hanging out with me tonight. David, would you like to say hello to everybody?
All right, try this again. My audio wasn't there. Okay, good evening.
Thank you.
And, it's currently 72 degrees here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, 68% humidity, and I'll work on my audio between now and next go around there. KB9EWG, back to you today.
All right, David, we had you a little low there, but we had you there, so glad to have you aboard tonight. We also have Fred, K2HA, on board. And Fred, would you like to say hello to everyone at this point?
Okay, very good. That is my pleasure to say hello, Gary. This is Fred, the happy amateur in Broomall, Pennsylvania, and I'll share what I can share this evening. So back to you, David. No, Gary, your turn. KC2GA, this is HA.
Yeah, it's my turn to be David next week. So, Fred, thanks for joining us tonight. And last, but certainly not least, a pleasant surprise, because this gentleman ended up in my spam folder, and we didn't think he was going to be here tonight, but I'm glad I decided to take a look. Paul, hello. It has been way, way, way too long. N1SEZ, come on aboard.
Okay, Gary, thank you very much. It's good to be here. And it's good to know that I end up in people's spam folders from time to time. It keeps me out of a lot of obligations, so it works out well. I also see in the text box there that Chief W4RFJ is questioning the fact that he was supposed to be a member of this team as well. So I certainly would be welcome as well. It's a really nice day, really nice evening here in Danbury, Connecticut. It's 78 degrees. These past 2 days have just been absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. One of the nicest pair of days that we've had all summer long. And if you can believe weather forecasts, which I find harder and harder to believe these days, rain will start this coming Sunday and won't stop again until sometime in early August. So this is the last of the nice weather in July, apparently. Back to you, Gary, N1SEZ.
Hey, thank you, Paul. Yeah, I think we bought our weather from the same place. We had pretty much the same forecast for Syracuse. So, yeah, tomorrow's going to be an absolutely beautiful day, and I'm putting everything on hold, and I'm going to go outside and just do... I'm going to be nature boy. I don't. I'm just going to go outside and just hang out and do things that need to be done out there, because the good days are going to go away for a while. It is great to have you aboard. And yes, I do see W4RFJ out there. And sir, I am more than welcome. More than happy, rather, to have you here tonight, and have you as part of this ensemble. I don't know how we missed you. I sent the mail out, but maybe you ended up in my spam folder too, although I didn't see you. But W4RFJ, come on aboard and say hello. I think we lost him. hopefully he'll could be coming back. And as soon as he comes back, he'll be able to join the rest of us. That'll be great. So we'll watch for him. And Roger, if you do come in, I don't see you on the list, but if you do come in, just jump right in. It's totally fine. So what are we doing here tonight? Well, tonight we're going to look at a couple of topics that are a perennial problem to many hams, and may even keep them from upgrading, believe it or not, you know. And you'll understand why we're saying that in just a minute or two. We'll be discussing limited space antennas and some solutions that I've found, both commercially and homebrew, that can really give you an excellent experience on the air. And speaking of upgrading, we'll spend a few minutes on talking about why you might want to upgrade your license. Okay, so it should be a fun time, and really, we should get some practical ideas for you if you're one of those folks that are trapped on a small lot or in an urban area. This might help you out a lot. But first, let's see if anybody else wants to say hi. Let's go out to the folks out there that are listening, take some check-ins, okay? I'm KC2GA. This is South Cars on the TIN looking for check-ins right now. Okay, nobody wants to get their feet wet on the first round, so let's see if we'll pick them up later, okay? One of the challenges that every ham faces is the challenge of putting up a decent antenna. You always hear these guys talking about, well, I've got this G5RB and it's up at 60 feet and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, you're looking at your lot and, you know, you're lucky you can get a lawn chair on there, right? Well, it's easy if you have a lot of room and a lot of money, but a lot of us aren't that lucky. Many of us are on small urban lots with no room for even a G5RB. Verticals don't take a lot of space, but radials can be tough to put down in a small area. I'm one of those urban hands, and I've tried everything from slinkies, yeah, they do work, to non-resonant random length wire antennas and anything else I could throw up there. But I've kind of come up with a few things that I can recommend for a limited space ham. Okay, I think the first thing that we want to look at is let's do it cheap and easy, right? We want to keep the cost down. And we want the thing to be relatively easy to put up, and we want it to work, right? So I got a couple of things here that might just work for you, but first I'm going to buy a nickel. So we're going to start with some non-commercial solutions first. Now, you can find plans for these on the web, the things that I'm talking about, and there are ready-made versions as well, but I say, you know, it's always better to homebrew. You probably got the stuff sitting around on your garage anyway. Let's go with the first. The simplest antenna that you can do is a dipole, right? Just calculate the length. One side to the feed, one side to the shield. Hang it up as high as you can. Lengths for 6 and 10 meters are accommodating enough, but once you get to 20 meters, that length is starting to get to be too much for the space that many operators have. Okay, so what do you do about that? Well, a simple trick is not to use the dipole as a flat top antenna. One space-saving method is to use the antenna as an inverted V, all right, placing a feed point up high on a tall single support in the center and sloping the ends to about 8 feet off the ground. Most of your length is up, so you'll have space on the ground. Okay, so that you can pretty much reduce the length of that antenna about 30%, maybe a little better if you sharpen that angle. Of course, if you can get the center support up high. Okay, that is a really tried and true method for a lot of hams. As a matter of fact, we went out to dinner a little bit earlier tonight, and on one street, a guy's got an inverted V off of his rooftop. He's got a tripod with a mast, and he's got the center point of that V up high on that, and he's sloping it off the roof. And pretty nice little setup. It blends into the neighborhood pretty well. All you see is the mast, really, and that's not objectionable, I think, to anyone. And it doesn't interfere with anybody. Looks pretty effective. So use your imagination, and you can do pretty well with that. Again, if you're interested in that particular design, all you have to do is go on Google. Google inverted V antenna, V-E-E is how they usually spell it, and you'll see lots of ways on how to do that. Let me just buy a nickel. Now, moving on from the inverted V, and again, there's other types of configurations that you can do, but these are the ones that are the easiest and most manageable solutions for folks. So I'm going to just stick with those. You can consult with the ARRL wire antenna manual, and you'll see lots of variations on everything I'm talking about tonight. But the next one that seems to be doable for a lot of folks is an end-fed antenna. Now, what's that, you say? End-fed antennas are a great limited space solution, and they're stealthy, too. All you're doing is hanging a single wire, and that's usually 27 to 64 feet long. The antenna is fed off of an impedance-matching transformer. The missing wire, in comparison to a dipole, is in the shield of the transmission line. Now, N-feds are really versatile. You can get a fiberglass kite pole. I don't know if you've ever seen these. You can Google that. Go on eBay. They're relatively cheap. They go anywhere from 30 to 80 bucks, and they're about 30 feet in height, and that's kind of an ideal height for doing things with antennas. So you can get one of these kids or something similar and make a vertical end-fed antenna, or configure it as an inverted L to help save space. Now, there is one major drawback to this type of antenna. Because the live element works against the shield, that end usually returns some RF into the shack. Now, I had a great end-fed 27-foot vertical, but as soon as I worked on 20 meters, my house went berserk, and I'll tell you about that in just a second. Everything in my house must love 20 meters, because when I was using that thing, computers rebooted, alarms went off. It was just a crazy time in here. I was running up. We have a split-level house, and I would run upstairs to take care of the CO2 alarm while the fire alarm was going off upstairs, and it was just crazy, all because of RF on the line. Now, the solution, believe it or not, is a very simple one. An RF isolator, or one-to-one UNUN, becomes between the transmission line and the transceiver generally does the trick. Now, for extra protection and improved performance, just run a 25 to 35 foot counterpoise. All that is a single radial off the shield end of the feed point connector. And Viola, the RF problem is solved. And these can be pretty effective antennas, and certainly solve two problems, that of getting a decent antenna up in a limited space. And for those of you who might have homeowners restrictions, etc., these blend in very, very well with the stuff in the background. Okay, there's a couple of easy solutions to get things started. We've got David, Fred, and Paul, and possibly Roger if he ever shows up again tonight. And so let's kick things off with David. Any comments on that? Have you ever been in a situation where you've had to deal with a limited space antenna? Did you ever use any of these solutions, or you have something else that you might want to throw our way? We'd love to hear from you. So David, come on aboard.
Okay, first of all, okay, good. I want to see how my audio is looking. I think I'm a little hot here. Turn it down a little bit. How's that on the audio side there before I continue?
Much better, just a tad hot, but certainly a lot better than what we had before.
Okay, well, yeah. Well, Gary, I'm in an apartment, and I have a tiny lot as is. So, yes, I'm dealing with all of that, as you said there. I have a slinky dipole in my going from my living room to my bedroom, running along the ceiling of my apartment. I have a random length of wire that came out of a degaussing coil from a TV set. So I've got a random length wire loop running around the entire perimeter of the apartment, going through holes in the walls and everything else there. So I've got two indoor antennas that way, and outside on a clothesline pole, I've got a super antenna MP1 that I've been running as on multi-bands there. So, and I have built an MFED, and I actually built a 921 on that one, where I had to hand wind the toroid and everything else for that thing. Another thing I ran into with RF was I was having the mice on my computers becoming inoperable and monitors going blank and everything else. One way I solved that was I took a length of coax and ran a length of coax into a loop, about a foot diameter loop there, with several turns of coax between the antenna and the and the rest of the feed line there. So I've had this very similar situations there and come up with very similar solutions there, Gary. Back to you, KB9EWG.
Well, I'll tell you, you're definitely preaching to the choir here. I have got my very first antenna was a slinky. I read about that and I said, why not? So I got a couple of slinkies and I strung them up on the back porch, and they really do work. I was pretty surprisingly successful with that thing. I used to check in. We're in Syracuse, New York, of course, and I used to check in on 40 meters Sunday mornings with a net in Ohio using that thing, and wasn't the greatest signal in the world, but it was always usable. So they really do work. So if you hear somebody saying that's a bunch of baloney, it really isn't. It works. It works pretty well. That loop that you've got, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'll share something with you. There is a not endorsing it, but I'll let you know what it is. MFJ makes what they call a loop controller, and what you can do, it allows you to take a random sized loop and tune it. I've seen that in the catalog now pretty much every year that's out. I've talked to some folks that actually have used this thing, and it works pretty well. Have you ever heard of this thing?
No, actually I haven't. But as I said, well, first of all, if I look up at the ceiling, I see the Slinky up there. It's still up there, and I've used it on occasion, especially if it's lightning outside. I can be still running inside on my indoor antenna on the Slinky there. And I now have an auto tuner that I'm using, an MFK929 auto tuner, to tune my antennas. But yeah, I was just using I've got a Kentek tuner that I've been tuning the random wire with. When I need to tune it, it's got the open lugs on it there to load open wires. So between the Slinky and the dipole, between the Slinky and the loop, I can work everything from 10 to up to 80 meters. So you know, I've got everything covered here. Then of course on my super antenna out in the yard, you know, I can do a lot of the bands also from 10 to 40 to 10 to 80. If I had the 80-meter coil on that super antenna, so very well covered here for what little space I got, what little antennas I got. I mean, all the way up to earning my DXCC, Gary. KB9EWG, back to you.
So you see right there, you know, don't let limited space limit what you can do on the area. It sounds like you've done some pretty fine work there, David, and that's great. It really is. I see W4RFJ is back in the mix. So Roger, we'll go down the list and we'll pick you right up after Paul, okay? And it's great to see you there on the list tonight. And as we move along, Fred, what do you think? Have you had any experience working with limited space antennas, or do you have any thoughts on that? Let's hear what you're weighing in with.
Okay, thank you, Gary. This is K2HA, and the couple comments on the first of all, the folded dipole. The folded dipole, probably the easiest way to construct one of those is to use ladder line, and so you just you feed it in the middle with ladder line, and so it's an entirely ladder line antenna. So you have one side of the horizontal part is loops around to the top and then back to the center feed. And so you put the solder the two ends together of the ladder line, and in the middle you hook to just the one side. You break it there and hook the ladder line going down to your tuner, and you're in business. It works really good. And in terms of the NFED antenna, the ZEP antenna, which used to be on Zeppelins, I did a little research and found a 34-foot NFED J-pole. And it's just an NFED antenna. It's made by Alpha Antenna. And it goes from 6 all the way to 160 meters. So, and the SWR on that little baby is approximately 2.2 down to 1.4 on all the bands except for 160 meters. So 6 through 80, you're almost at 2 or below. And people have been getting great reviews on that, and that little baby costs $170 from Alpha Antenna, but it's not long. It's only 34 foot long and gets rid of the power RF going back into the shack. That disappears because of the J-pole construction. And so you don't have to worry about all of that the RF coming down and turning off all your equipment or messing everything up or giving you a big shock. So those are two possibilities there that I think will help those who have a little bit of room. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA. Back to you, Gary.
Hey, thank you, Fred. That's great. I have not heard of that Alpha J poll. I think that's awesome. One thing I wanted to mention was that that somebody had mentioned about a 9-to-1 transformer on the feed line, and that is correct. You need that for a conventional NFED. But I also recommend putting a 1-to-1 isolator at the where the feed line enters the shack, because that'll block any RF coming down the line too. But I had never heard of that. But that's gee whiz, the price is right, and it covers just about everything. You know, and certainly it's a manageable size at 34 feet. You can put that thing just about anywhere. So I'm gonna be checking that one out a little bit later on, because I'm always looking for some sort of an antenna. Even though I've got a pretty good solution right now, and we'll be talking about that in a little bit. You know, hey, you never know, right? Okay, thank you, Fred, and we'll be getting back with you in a little bit. Right now, let's move it along to N1SEZ Paul. What has been your experience or your comments about your experience with or comments on limited space antennas? Have you ever had to deal with limited spaces and getting a decent signal out?
Well, thank you, Gary. N1SEZ here. No, I've been blessed with real estate. ever since I've gotten my ticket, I've pretty much lived either renting a house or the house that I now own. With you know, here in New England, we've got a lot of trees pretty much everywhere, so I've always been able to get an antenna fairly high up in the trees. And generally, what I do with these things is I use a dipole configuration, flat top, fed in the center with ladder line, 450 ohm ladder line, that I bring directly into the shack to an antenna tuner, and that's that. And I've worked the world with and those kinds of antennas. RF, I think if I remember early in the early days when my super duper computer that wasn't a laptop, it was a tower, it was a Gateway 286 processor or something like that, that would occasionally reboot when I was transmitting. But other than that, I didn't have any problems with that. However, let me drop it. Lately, I've been playing around with QRP. And in anticipation of trying to find something that would be easy to deploy for portable operations, I have been experimenting here. And I got a currently one of those fiberglass masts that you were talking about. Thing extends in sections. It's pretty neat, actually. It goes up about 26 feet. And about 2 feet down from the top of that, with electrical tape, I simply have a little, now remember, it's QRP, so everything I use can be pretty small. And I just tape a one-to-one balun on there and feed it with coax, and then I've got a dipole coming off of that. And that's set in a inverted V. And this pole is strapped to... currently to one of the supports on my deck outside. So between the 25 feet or so that I get on the pole, and I'm about 8 or 10 feet up above the ground, I generally tell people the antenna's up about 30 feet, and works pretty darn well with 5 watts. So that's basically all I've got to offer for little antennas with a small amount of space, because this one is currently the smallest I've ever had, and again, it's really for the idea of being able to now take this out into the field and try it like out on a park bench or something like that. I'm not going to be doing any mountain climbing. All right, Gary, I'm not going to hold it for too long. Back to you, N1SEZ.
Well, that's two of us that aren't climbing any mountains, I can tell you that. Hey, but you know what? You know what? You think about that. Now, you're a guy who's always had, you know, a full-sized antenna. You've always, you know, never really had to worry about that, and you're, but here you're finding that you can do an awful lot with just, you know, a relatively small footprint, and that's kind of the message that we're trying to get out tonight. One of the messages, anyway, is that one of them is, of course, don't shortchange yourself. You can do a lot of things with a small space. And the second thing is that you know, you really can go the distance. You know, granted, you're not going to have quite the success that people with a full-sized setup are going to have, but you can make some pretty impressive contacts. I can, and I'm going to talk about that in just a little bit too. But definitely, a small antenna or a small space antenna doesn't have to be a limiting factor. Paul, thank you. We'll be talking to you in a little bit. But last but certainly not least, we have W4RFJ Chief. So glad to see you there. Come on aboard, sir. Well, I think we lost the chief again. So we'll try to get him in there as soon as he shows up again. He's kind of in and out, so hopefully he'll come back and life will be wonderful right now. Okay, but that being as it may, let's throw it out there to the general listening audience. So let's see if anybody wants to check in. I'm KC2GA. This is the TIN on South Cars. Looking for check-ins right now.
VicSHJQ, John in Australia. Good evening.
Well, good evening, Australia, and nice to hear from you. Come on aboard.
Yeah, thanks very much for letting me in. A fantastic net. Robert must have connected up SCARS this morning, and interesting information on all the antennas there, over.
Well, thank you. We've got a couple of other little tidbits coming down the line, so I hope you'll stay with us and jump in whenever you can.
Yep, fantastic. Good. I'm just having some breakfast, late breakfast, 9:34 a.m. here Friday morning down under. All right, back to net control from VicR3HJQ.
Well, have some coffee and toast on me. And again, jump in whenever the chance avails itself. It's great to have you aboard. Hey, let's look at a couple of commercial solutions. We talked about the things you can do with the stuff in your junk box and you know, the kind of things that you can finagle at home. But you know, sometimes there's some commercial solutions that can be very beneficial as well. And I'm going to talk about two antennas that that have done a very good job for me. And also want to that Alpha JPO, I'm going to investigate that too, that Fred was talking about, because that sounds pretty cool. But I've had a couple of commercial antennas that have done a great job for me. The first one is my current antenna. That's the Comet CHV 5X. That is just a great little antenna. Remember, and I would point this out too, you're never going to find everything that you want in any antenna, especially in an antenna that works in limited space. But if it performs well in concert with your goals, you've got yourself a winner. And that's kind of like what I have going on right now with the 5X. It covers 40 through 6 meters. It's reasonably priced in the low 300s. I mean, you can certainly spend a lot more on an antenna. And you may have seen this on the TV, on the set of the TV show Last Man Standing. Now, personally, I don't think that's Tim Allen's greatest effort, but he's his producer has very good taste in antennas. It can be configured as a flat top, a ground plane, or a V. Not an inverted V, but a V-type V. I use mine in that V configuration, and I think most people that own that particular antenna do. It's easily rotatable, too, because it is directional. I use an Armstrong rotator, which is a pair of vice grips clamped to the mast. Is go out there and turn it. That's it. So you can aim your signal where you need it. Very easy to set up, particularly if you have an antenna analyzer. You have to adjust the ends on these arms. But it does not take a lot of doing. I think if you just go, you could even do it without an antenna analyzer. Just go to the midpoint, and you'd be fine. And especially if you're using an antenna tuner, you're going to be fine there too. The only drawback that I have been able to find on this antenna would be that it is somewhat limited in bandwidth. I just got the golden crystal. I don't think anything cut off there. I kind of got it at the end of a sentence. But the other downside is that you don't get any of the WARC bands. So if you like working 30 or 17, it's just not going to happen for you on this particular antenna. That's also a sticking point for me. I like to work 17 a lot. I like 30 meters, and I really do miss them. Other than that, this has been an awesome antenna. It has really consistently gotten me some decent DX. I can go on PSK Mapper, and I can show up in Europe left and right. I have gone to all corners of the world on this antenna, and it's just been great. So with the acceptance of those limitations, not a big deal, because it really, really works. Let me buy another nickel so it doesn't happen again. And we've got another one that I want to talk about as well, and this one is probably the best solution I have ever found for a limited space. And actually, I would use this thing if I didn't have to be dealing with the constraints of a small lot. It's the MFJ1786/1788. They're the same antenna, but they have two different coverages. As I said, I absolutely love this antenna. After 8 years of using this thing, the motor died. I plan on fixing this one of these days and putting it back into service alongside the Comet. What is it? What is this guy talking about? It's a magnetic loop. It's a small 3-foot circle of extruded aluminum that is tuned with a very large motorized capacitor. This type of antenna has a very high Q, that's selectivity, and has a low takeoff angle, which is great for DX, and it doesn't need to be mounted up high. So if you don't have a rooftop available or a high point that you can string an antenna from, this is just great for you. Let me buy another nickel. I'm getting shy about the purple crystal. The 1786 version of this covers 10 through 30 meters. The 1788 covers 15 through 40 meters. I've worked tons of DX with my 1788. To me, it's an ideal small space solution. The downside, because of the high Q, you have to retune when you change frequencies. It's no big deal. Once you start using it, you get it down quickly, but you should be aware that you need to do it. Also, it's a bit pricey. Goes for about $450, but honestly, it works well enough that you really don't mind too much sending the money over to Starksville. It's just it's okay. It really does work. It's one of those few things that I've found lives up to its hype. So it's a good deal. Let's see if the crew that's hanging out with me tonight has any comments on this. David, what do you think about these two? Are you familiar with any of these, or what? Any comments at all on that?
Well, I've seen and heard of both of them. I don't have any personal experience with either one, so I couldn't comment on that. My commercial solution is, as I mentioned earlier, I do have the Super Antenna MP1. Which actually is part of my QRP kit. I've got a full QRP setup I throw in a backpack, and the Super Antenna MP1 is part of that. But I've been running that as my primary HF antenna lately, and doing very well.
with my MFJ IntelliTuner, I'm able to get, without having to run outside between the antenna, I'm able to get 17, 20, 30, and 40 very easily, just by using the AutoTuner and letting it do its thing. And I've been pretty successful with those four bands on the super antenna for being, I say, on a limited space here. So, you know, I was using a manual tuner till a few months ago when I bought the auto tuner, and it's made a big difference in my operation. But like I say, the homemade antennas have worked very well, and the super antenna is doing me well also. So despite the small space, I'm still getting out. Back to you there, Gary, KB90WG.
Well, that's the name of the game, you know, getting the most bang for the buck. And really, and that's one thing that I think folks can really appreciate, that a good antenna tuner will really allow you to do a lot of stuff that really you might not thought that you could have. You know, you can take a random length of wire, and if you've got a good enough tuner, you know, at least operate on it. It may not be, it's not going to be resonant, and you're not going to be throwing the best signal that you can out there, but you can at least get on that band, you know. I know I've been using LDG auto tuners now for 11 or 12 years anyway, and I'd be lost without it, you know. I swear by mine. So yeah, you definitely need them. That's for sure. Yeah, you've done a fine job with what you've got there. I know super antennas have a great reputation. So I've never known anybody to use one before. You're the first time that I've heard about, you know, that I've heard any comments from an actual user. I think it's just verifying everything that you hear from folks around the web. You know, it's good stuff. Thank you, David. We'll move on to Fred. Any comments on what we've been talking about so far, sir?
Okay, Gary. Yes, sure do. The DX store sells the Comet, the one that the CHV5X, for $299. Other people sell it for $50 more. It gets very good ratings on EHAM. It's a 4.8 out of 5, and a lot of people love it. And about the magnetic loop, well, I was reading the reviews on that on EHAM, and recently their quality control seems to have gone downhill. People are sending them back like crazy. And so read, if you're interested, make sure you read the reviews on EHAM. The price has gone up to $500 for that magnetic loop from MFJ. And so just a warning on that. But an alternative, the MFJ, you can get up to 150 watts into it, but a 100 watt version of a magnetic loop is 10 through 40 magnetic loop from Alpha Antenna, and it is, and you can also have a version that gets down to 80 on that. It runs, starts at $400, and it's got the automatic tuning device on it also. So it's just another alternative if you're interested in a small space magnetic loop, which is portable, of course, and you can set it up on a tripod and all kinds of things like that out in the field. So it's worth a look for a small space antenna. A lot of people have tremendous luck with magnetic loops, so especially in apartments. So this is Fred, K2HA. Back to you, Gary.
I paid too much for my CHV5X. Oh, no. Hey, you know, that's interesting about the reviews on the 1786, 1788. I know MFJ, you know, they kind of go in streaks with quality control, you know. It's like they get one good shipment and everybody's, hey, it's all great, and then they get the other shipment and it's bad and everybody's sending it back. That's, I guess, the way it is when you deal with them, you know, they're always a little sketchy, you know. it's true, but they always, you know, they always have stuff like that loop. Now, I did not know about this alpha antennas loop. Tell me, sir, is this alpha delta or just alpha antennas? Because there's an alpha delta antennas as well. Is this just plain alpha or alpha delta?
Well, it's it says alpha antenna on it, and the website is alphaantenna.com. So check it out. I know I've had some alpha antennas, and they usually are pretty good quality, and they usually work very well. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA.
Thanks, Fred. Yeah, because there's an alpha delta. An alpha delta made an antenna that at one point I was looking at. It was called the DX-EE Echo Echo. Which was a multi-band dipole, and I wanted to use that as in an inverted V configuration. As a matter of fact, I almost got that thing when I decided on the CHV5X. So that's why I was asking. So I want to check that out, because if that loop will take 100, I see lots of QRP loops out there that are pretty expensive, but that alpha loop sounds very interesting, because you know, I don't know how much it's going to take to replace the motor in this thing. If that's the motor indeed that's causing the problem, it could be the control box isn't sending voltage up the line. What it does is it sends DC up your transmission line to turn the motor in that thing. So it could be the box is bad too. So I'm not sure. Haven't troubleshot it yet, but once we get into it, it may be more cost-effective to start thinking about an alpha loop as opposed to repairing that. So thank you, sir. We move on to Paul and N1SEZ. Your comments, good sir.
Well, there we go. I had trouble clicking the button here. Ham operator. Gary, N1SEZ here, and thank you, David, Fred, for all your comments. The Comet CHV5X, rotatable dipole, I see that on DX Engineer. I forget where Fred said he saw it, but if it makes you feel any better, Gary, I see it on DX Engineering for $339.99. It's pretty nifty looking antenna too, but so there you go. There's that one. Don't have any experience with that, and I do have experience with The Last Man Standing. Gosh, Gary, I love that show. So there you go. To each his own. But we'll just move along from that comment and talk about magnetic loops. Now, Gary, our last TIN. I had mentioned that I was becoming interested in magnetic loops and wanted to get one. I haven't gotten one yet, but I've ordered one. And in fact, it's one of these expensive QRP ones that you just mentioned. Alpha does indeed make them, but this company is Chameleon, and it's they make a couple of different models. And they're configurable in different ways. So you can buy the base model, you can add stuff to it, and you can, you know, get in at whatever price point you want. Well, you know, once you hit the minimum, and go up from there. But the one that I'm getting, and let me see if I can avoid a purple crystal here. I ended up ordering the Chameleon F loop. F is in Frank. The F loop 2.0, and that has yet to arrive yet. Now that thing sells for $399, and it's QRP only. They have let's see. I think you can run 25 watts single sideband and maybe 15 maximum CW. So that's not so bad. I'm not sure how it would work for your digital modes, though, Gary. And you can add on for $100 some kind of magic gizetry on there that allow it to actually run with 60 watts. But I don't know how that works. That one I haven't been able to figure out. Let me drop it again. But anyway, what got me to finally pull the trigger on this thing was that over the July 4th holiday, the 3rd, 4th, and 5th, they had a sale. And they were knocking $100 off of whatever model you wanted to buy. So I took that opportunity, and it should be here any day. I'm looking forward to using it inside, outside. Again, part of this whole thing is, me realizing I'm not going to be living in New England for the rest of my life. I'm going to be down in Florida, and I do not have trees, tall ones anyway, that I can be stringing antennas up. So this seemed like a nice thing to have, especially if you're stuck inside the house in the middle of a hurricane, and you want to see if the rest of the world is still alive. So, but one more drop. But the whole thing seems intriguing to me. I'm convinced that these magnetic loop antennas actually do work and work well. I think they were originally designed and used by and for the military, and with those antennas that they used to, strap on their backs, and they would stick a loop right on top of that. And you mentioned the high Q, that really, really narrow bandwidth. Some people don't like that. They think it's a pain in the butt having to change, retune every time you move the, a few kc's away from where you are. But it has the advantage also of knocking down a heck of a lot of noise. I mean, your receive signals on these things are supposed to be absolutely quiet. They're inherently quiet. So I'll find out if any or all of that is true when I get mine coming up, Gary. So back to you, November 1, Sierra Echo Zulu, over to KC2GA.
Hey, thank you, Paul. I'll tell you this. I'll wager you a cup of coffee that you will be supremely satisfied with that. I really can't. I can't think of a better antenna for certainly a limited space, and I really would use one without hesitation, even as a main antenna, if you had all the space in the world. They're just great. I have used to work a lot of 17 meter voice, and that was wonderful. I mean, that was great. You're just like you say. You don't worry about noise. If you're trying to do a DX contact and somebody's buried right down in there, you don't have to worry about it so much. I mean, you're going to pull them with that. It's just great. You do have to get a little. You have to learn how to do the tuning quickly, and you'll get that after a day or two of using it. There's really nothing to it. I've looked at those chameleon loops. But for me, not doing QRP, that wasn't a good solution. But I am kind of excited about that alpha loop. I'd like to check that out a little bit and see, because there may be some possibilities for that. I've got I've got a friend up here that wants to buy the loop dead or alive, so maybe we could work a little deal on that and put it towards an alpha. I don't know. But thank you, Paul, and great to hear from you as always, and of course we'll hear from you a little bit later on. But let's see if we have any check-ins right now from the net. This is KC2GA on the TI end looking for check-ins right now.
K2HA.
K2HA, go right ahead.
Yeah, one caution with magnetic loops is be careful how much radiation you're going to have with the if you're using more than QRP, and if you're doing 100 watts or so, make sure you have the proper spacing of yourself away from the magnetic loop so that you don't get radiated. This is Fred, K2HA.
Fred, that's a very, very good point. You know, and again, if you're not familiar with this thing, you should look it up online, take a look at it. These are very small antennas. And like Paul was talking about, they had their origins in the military and also on aircraft. You used to see them on the old airliners. But they had their origins in the military. And a guy could carry one on his back, or you'd see him strapped to the end of a Jeep, you know, in World War II. And Paul, you're right, I see in the box, they're high voltages. Right, so you've got RF in the house. You've got they generate very high voltage on them. Really, if you're not using, if you're using more than 5 or 10 watts, don't put the thing inside your house. I never had a loop inside my house. I always had them mounted outside. You don't have to go very high with them. You can put them on a 6 foot piece of EMT. You know, stick it on, you know, clamp it to your fence, and you're fine, you know. But it's a really good caution because, honestly, you don't know what you're going to get with exposure to RF. Probably, you know, you're going to be okay, but why fool around? And certainly the voltage hazard is there. So it just makes sense. Put the thing outside, you know. And just another comment on that CHV5X, that does not need a lot of height, but it you can get decent performance at about 15 feet, which is where I had mine for a while. But I jacked that thing up. It's about 25 feet up now. And you get it up there in that region, and you see a dramatic improvement in performance. If you thought you were doing well with it before, you're doing great with it when you get up to be about 25. So much so that I'm coming up with a way to get this kid up about about 40 feet, and I want to share that that mast with my magical 6-meter antenna, the PAR 0850, which we could talk about some other time. That's when you're talking about 6-meter antennas, you're really not talking. Any antenna is going to be suitable for limited space, but if you're looking for a 6-meter antenna that that does the job, a PAR 0850 is definitely one that'll do it. Looks like Fred's got another point. So
yeah, Gary, with that magnetic loop, some hams are actually...
Well, let's bring them aboard. K2HA?
...monthly and getting omnidirectional out of them. I've never tried that, but I hear some people have a lot of success. Okay, K2HA. Back to you, Gary.
If you look at the 1788-1786 manual, they'll give you some references to mounting that horizontally. The caveat with that is that if you want it to work effectively, you have to have it up 20 feet or greater, because what happens is if you're below 20 feet, the ground effects just wipe your signal out and you ain't going nowhere. But once you get up to be about 20 feet or so, that omni pattern works very well for some folks. And again, it's kind of like the whole thing with a hobby experiment. You know, it's like give it a try. If it's not too much of a hassle, try it one way. If you don't like what you're getting, try it the other way. You know, but it will work in either polarization. That's for sure. Do we have anybody else out there wants to jump in right now? Okay, nothing heard at this time. And Roger seems to have vanished. I don't know what happened to the poor guy, but he's not there. I wanted to change the subject right now and talk for a moment about upgrading your license. I know there's a lot of folks out there. I mean, I don't know whether in this particular group, but you know, in the ham radio community, that are operating as technicians, and they're just kind of happy about their lot in life. They're hitting those repeaters. They're working 2 meters and 440 and UHF, and life is good for them. But and they really don't see a lot of need to upgrade their license. And I want to just talk for a few minutes about the advantages to doing that. But first, I'm going to buy a nickel. If you're a technician and you're just hanging out being a technician, you're missing out on a lot of what ham radio has to offer. Working VHF and UHF is great. Staying local is awesome. There's a lot of great nets. I know we certainly have a ton of them here. Every locality does. But there's a completely different world out there on HF. All I would say to do is if you have a transceiver that's capable of listening to the HF band, scan around it. Scan around the band. See what's there. See what you're hearing. It's a different way of doing ham radio. And you may not be familiar with that. It might be something once you hear it, it'll appeal to you greatly. I know certainly since I was a kid, that's what I it just grabbed me. Just the first time I was able to hear HF hams going at it and just chewing rags, I was hooked, you know. So I would say give it a listen and see if it's your cup of tea. Also, you gain a lot of knowledge when you make that jump between technician and going to a general or an extra ticket. It's as I said, totally different way of doing things, and you're going to get a lot more of the meat and potatoes of what ham radio is all about. You'll get some theory under your belt, some heavier theory. You'll get more exposed to what good operating practices are. You become a more complete, in my opinion, operator. So again, listen to those guys that are on the air. Most of the guys you're going to hear, and gals, are pretty professional in their presentation, and they are going to give you they're going to hear a pretty accomplished bunch of people talking. If you want to join those ranks, it's not hard to jump from technician to general. It's not easy, but it's not hard either. Let me buy a nickel. It just takes a little studying, and oddly enough, we have an outreach here at Southcars to help folks with that jump. So watch the page for when the general ticket comes up. You're going to gain a lot more frequencies to operate on the HF bands, and you get to use phone on all the bands that allow phone operation. It's a blast, really, to communicate literally around the world. The first time that you make an international contact is a little surreal, but it's very, very cool. That's worth it. It's great just to move up from repeaters and get on the air to distant places. Some people say, wow, you know, it costs a lot of money to do HF. Not really. Hang on a second while I buy some time. One purple crystal and I'm starting to bite my nails. The cost is not as much as you think. You can hit those repeaters till the cows come home with a 50-buck handheld, but it's not the same as talking to somebody in Spain on 17 meters. Now, if you shop carefully at Hamfest and do a little home brewing antenna-wise, I bet you can put a decent little station together for 500 bucks or even less, and it'll work just fine. You can get involved with digital modes. There's a lot of digital work out there. I'll tell you, digital modes have their ups and downs. They're great for being able to go huge distances on very little power. It gets a little boring after a while because you're just swapping signal reports, but it has its place. And, excuse me, it's not all FT8 or JT65. You know, there's digital voice, there's modes like Olivia, there's PSK31. These are actual QSOs that you're doing, and it really is rewarding. It's amazing what you can do when you marry computer technology and ham radio. It's pretty cool stuff. And of course, last but certainly not least, CW, the original digital mode. It's a part of our heritage, and honestly, it's a modern-day art form. I think you talk to anybody who's competent in that, and they're going to tell you the same thing. Making the jump from general to extra may not yield as many benefits, but I'll tell you this. You gain a ton of knowledge, and you walk away from that exam with a ton of pride. Stephanie said I almost popped 3 buttons on my shirt when I got my ticket. Let's see what Fred, David, and Paul are up to. Let's go right now for some comments from David. Come on aboard.
Well, all right, you are about the enjoyment and everything else you get out of upgrading. Of course, now I have always had HF privileges from the get-go. I originally passed myself as a novice before I became a technician, so I've always had access to HF. Even during that time when technicians did not have HF privileges, I still had HF privileges then. But as you said, as you go up in ranks and upgrade your license, you do gain more knowledge. I tell you, the day I passed my extra, it knocked me over with a stick. You know, it was since I became an extra, you know, I do feel more rounded. Definitely enjoy the hobby a lot more. And of course, I give back to the hobby as a volunteer examiner. So I'm bringing new people into and upgrading people in the hobby here as a VE. So made that jump to extra, and I'll tell you what, it was well worth it. Definitely enjoy HF. I do enjoy the digital modes, as you mentioned there, including slow scan TV. So back to you there, Gary, from KB90WG.
Thank you, David. Yeah, you know, it's like when you make that jump, it's kind of two different planes of hamdom. You go from tactician to general, and I know my experience because I came in as a technician, you go from just that local scene, with the handhelds and what have you, the repeaters and what have you, and you're saying to yourself, the first time you got on HF, you're like, you're really lost. It's like, what am I doing here, and what are these guys doing, and you're just wondering, everything you every time you open your mic, you think you're making a mistake, but you get it real quick, and you start. I wouldn't say you're not dealing with a higher class of hams, but you're dealing with a more accomplished class of hams, and that carries through when you get that extra. I studied very hard for that extra. I will tell you right now, the South Cars Outreach Extra class helped me a ton in getting that ticket. And very, very, very happy that I stumbled on that, because they really that got me my extra ticket and they got me involved with South Cars. That was quite a few years ago, but definitely was one of the better stumble ins of my existence. Let me buy a nickel here. So yeah, and it's just a really wonderful feeling of accomplishment. It's one of those, you know, for $15. I don't think you can walk away from anything feeling that good, that's for sure. It's definitely worth it, going from technician to general, from general to extra. It's a great feeling, it really is. So thank you. Thank you, sir. We'll move it along now to Fred. Fred, any comments?
Of course. A number of comments about the upgrading. I finally made it up to extra, and I really enjoy the quietness of the extra section of the band. It's possible there to spend quite a bit of time talking to people in other countries, in Germany, over in England, 15, 20 minutes learning about them, and it's not so hectic like in the general section of the band. Also, there's a tremendous amount of groups on many different frequencies that meet. Some meet daily, some meet weekly, monthly, interest groups. And you find all kinds of interesting things happening on HF that you make friends, a lot of friends. Also, the when you get older, a lot of those friends are very valuable to have, especially if you keep communicating and you're not so lonely. As men get older, and they find it very useful to be a ham radio operator. Okay, back to you, Gary. This is Fred, K2HA.
Hey, thank you, Fred. Yeah, you're totally right. You get up into the extra portion, and you know, you're among a select group of folks. It definitely is quieter. And I'll tell you one thing too. This is something that I think everybody can really, you really get the feeling the first time you do it. You know, let's say that, you know, you make a contact to somebody in Europe. You're talking to Spain or Italy or whatever. And, you know, you're done with it, and just take a minute and look at your location on the map, and then look at where your signal went. And, you know, you say, I did that with 100 watts, you know. It's pretty cool. It never gets old. It never, ever gets old for me. And it's a wonderful experience talking to folks in other countries that have a common interest. It's just a really, really cool thing. I enjoy it every time. I can work a DX contact. It's just great stuff. Looks like Fred has another point, so let's bring him back aboard. Fred, come on.
Okay, and I want to second the thought that you can get equipment and get up on the air very reasonably. If you don't go after the most modern equipment, I'm running a Kenwood 9 TS-930S, which was top of the line model way back in the 80s. It's totally solid state, and I've invested $200 in it. Puts out 250 watts, works like a charm. Bought it from another ham in the area here, and he wanted something else, So some people can afford all that big and drool over all that equipment. I'm running an old station, and I'm having a lot of fun. This is Fred, K2HA.
For years, I used an IC-735. I loved that radio. I totally loved that radio. I've got an FTDX 1200 now. It's quite a different beast than that 735 was, but you know what? If the only radio that I ever had was that 735, it would be fine with me. So yeah, you're right. You don't have to spend a fortune on all the bells and whistles. If it modulates and it transmits and it receives, that's all you need, buckaroo. That's it, you know. And that's the other thing too. If you're doing like local 2-meter nets and what have you, somebody knows somebody that's got something for sale, you know. And usually, you know, most hams are pretty good about getting rid of old equipment. You know, they're not going to gouge you, and most guys won't sell you a piece of junk. So, you know, shop around, you know, to ask questions, because you never, ever know. It could pay off for you, and it could open up a whole lot of doors for you, that's for sure. Thank you, Brad. Let's move it along to Paul and see what he has to say about all this here stuff. Paul, come on aboard.
Okay, Gary, N1SEZ here. It's definitely worth the effort to upgrade, and especially when you go from a technician license to your general, that gives you, in terms of operating privileges, probably 95% of what you can do on the HF bands, and it's a whole different world. And it's the side of amateur radio that originally caught my attention. I've told the story here before, but the first time I ever was exposed to it, I was in the Boy Scouts, and basically, long story short, witnessed a local ham make a contact from Northeast Philadelphia to a guy who was a captain on a ship in the Mediterranean Ocean, and it was, think about midnight where he was, and the sun was still out where we were, and that was it. I was totally blown away. I couldn't believe it. So it's a great thing to do. When I first started, I came in as a technician and back. Now listen, folks, don't hold me to any of this. This is over 20 years ago, and my memory is not what it used to be, and it was never really very good. But we had an option at the time. You can get a technician license as an entry vehicle into ham radio, but if you could pass a 5 words per minute CW, you were a Tech Plus, and that allowed you some HF operating privileges in little slivers of the bands to practice your HF, your CW. There were a lot more classes then, so I went from Tech Plus to Advanced to General. Tech Plus, General, Advanced, and then Extra. And Extra was the biggie, both in terms of theory and CW, which was a requirement at the time, where I had to pass 20 words per minute. But the fortunate thing for me was I ended up discovering that I loved CW, which I never would have thought when I first got into the game. So you just never know. You think you might know what you like to do, then you get into the hobby. There's so many things to try, and you might surprise yourself on what you enjoy doing. I'll drop it again. Yeah, Gary's got me sweating bullets here, worrying about a purple crystal too. So upgrading is great. HF operation is fantastic. You don't need a lot of money to do it. My first rig was a Kenwood CS440S, and back in the day when I got that, I think I paid $300 for it, because it wasn't a very it wasn't exactly a young radio at the time either. It was, you know, a used thing. It was great, and I'll never forget the first DX contact I made. It was a rainy, stormy night, and I was just, oh, let's see what's on the radio, and I called CQ, and a station came back to me, and I wasn't sure that I copied it correctly. I had to hear it three times before I had convinced myself. Lo and behold, I just made contact with a guy in Czechoslovakia, and I've never forgotten it, and hopefully I never will. It was just, it's a very amazing feeling when you do that. And Gary, I also share your love for 17 meters. I would be lost without the work bands. 17 for years was my favorite band. Worked a lot of DX, including several contacts in Japan on 17 meters, usually around sunset local. So anyway, it's all good. It's all great stuff, and it's all about learning and having fun, and that's what really matters. N1SEZ back to net.
Boy, that is really something, because my first DX contact, the first contact that I made, was on 17 meters, and it was Poland. It wasn't Czechoslovakia, but I will never ever forget that. And I think again, the only possible way that you can appreciate that experience is to actually experience it for yourself. It's really, really something. You know, and you're right, Paul. There's so many things that you can do on HF that just aren't available to you, you know, with that tech license. I know, and this is just like me, you know. But I'm very, I put a big emphasis on station audio, so I have, in spite of my voice, I still like to have it sound like the old days, back when I was, you know, on the air. So I've got some pretty sophisticated, audio chain going into that thing. And it really sounds good. It's kind of cool what you can do, you know, in that end of things, too, that, you know, you can take a good thing and make it better, you know. So if you're an audio freak, there's another door that's open for you on HF. You know, you're not gonna get that on 2 meters. There just is so much, and that's another reason too. I want to get that loop back up, because I do miss those work bands like crazy. So you know, that's a priority for me before school goes, before we get back to school, is to get something work capable up by the end of summer. Thank you, Paul. And let's throw it out there right now. Anybody have any comments on what we've been talking about? We'd love to hear from you. This is the TIN on South Cars. I'm KC2GA, and we're looking for check-ins right now.
This is Zulu Lima 4, November Oscar Romeo Mike, Norm here, State Island, New Zealand.
MHL, come aboard.
This is KB4 MHL. I was just jumping on to listen. I got bored driving home, so I'm just gonna sit back and listen while I concentrate on my driving.
Roger. Anybody else? Come on aboard.
Zulu Lima 4, November Oscar Radio Mike, North South Island, New Zealand.
There you are. Welcome. Do you have any comments?
Zulu 4, anywhere. I'm here. Sorry, I kept doubling with people and trying to check in a few times here. I missed a bit because I had to go and answer a phone call, but I quite interested about your, you know, antennas for small areas and that. I've had to do a wee bit of a tricky one here, so a little for height restrictions for antenna towers and stuff like that we have here. because we're in a coastal scenic area here, and I've cheated by making my antenna tower out of scaffolding. And as long as you leave a couple of scaffolding clamps on there, it's technically a temporary structure, which has been up for about 7 years now. But the way of getting around the rules, I put up a temporary structure, in quotes, and that's the way I've got around the local regulations to put my antenna tower up. Thanks for bringing the net, and very interesting topic, so I'll just pass it back over to Net Control, ZL4NRM.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's amazing what those temporary structures can do, huh? They have a habit of great longevity. Anybody else want to join it?
Well, I had a comment. Echo Whiskey Golf.
Yes, David, what's up?
Well, first of all, I want to say I do agree with you and Paul about 17. I do like 17 meters, and you never forget your first contacts there. I'll never forget my first CW contact ever. I was on an old HW-101 tuning around 15 meters, calling CQ. And first time I heard my call sign come back to me in CW, I just froze. I just sat there and literally froze. So, but a friend of mine helped me through it. I established contact there and everything else. And, you know, 15 meters, it could have been anywhere in the world. And here it was. I was on the north side of Kenosha, and he was on the south side of Kenosha in the state of Wisconsin here. The very next Monday night, we had an eyeball exchange at the next meeting at the club station. So I say, you never forget that first contact, and mine was Lee Downs, KC9ZGD, or KB9ZGD, on 15 meters there and on CW. Just wanted to comment on that as well. KB9EWG.
Well, I know that first time, you know, you put your calls out and somebody answers, you're right. You know, you just go, I'm gonna. It's like, what am I going to do? You know, but you somehow stumble through it. You know? And the rest, as they say, is history. But it is. I think everybody remembers their first cue, so... And what it was like. You know, Paul was talking about earlier, too, about the very first time that, you know, you heard somebody on the air, you heard, you know, that you were exposed to ham radio. I remember, this was many, many moons ago. You know, you get an idea of who this old geezer on the radio is right here. This was back when... the low frequencies on television channels were very close to the 6 meter band, and we had a neighbor. He was a missile guidance engineer out at GE at Electronics Park here, and he would get on 6, you know. And if you were watching channel 3, it would spill over. Let me buy a nickel, you know. So I'd being the clever kid that I was, you know, I'd tune around and see if I could get him in a little better, and I'd get him pretty well. You know, obviously he was like 2 houses down, so it was coming in just fine. And I thought this was really cool. I had a friend, his parents had a Zenith Transoceanic, which was a very, very expensive consumer general purpose and shortwave radio in its day. And we would sneak into the den and tune around in this thing, and you could get the hams on it. And I remember this was the very early days of SSB, and if you played around with the BFO on that, you could get the speech to decode just right, and it was just fascinating. We'd listen to that, and I was hooked. You know, that was great stuff. So. But yeah, you know, you do retain these things, that's for sure. Great stuff. Thank you. Anybody else want to join in before we give it a last call to breakfast?
K9FON, listening.
FON, come on aboard.
Tango Yankee to that list.
Hi, good evening. All name here is Milt, Mike India Lima Tango. I'm from West Michigan, Towns Hall Hastings, Berry County. I checked in a while back to the one time in the morning on South Cars.
Well, nice to have you checking in right now. We appreciate it. Looks like Nasty was checking in. How you doing there, sir?
Well, good evening to everybody out there, and sorry about that double there. This is November Zero, Sierra Tango Yankee. I am located at Beecher Island, Colorado. It is the site of a pretty serious battlefield back in the Indian Wars, Plains Indian days. A famous warrior lost his life here, as well as other several recognizable characters from the Old West. Anyway, we're out here doing some camping. It's a beautiful evening. The wind is blowing just right. I'm a technician. I barely have time for the frequencies that I am allotted. But in the future, I will upgrade when I have more time and am able to spend more towards the radio hobby. This is N0SCY. Good day, everybody out there. Back to net.
Well, it sounds like you're having a great time. And, yeah, you know, nobody's saying rush to do it. That's part of the deal is take your time, enjoy the learning process so that you can enjoy the fruits of your learning, you know. So definitely go for it when the time is right, and it's really worth the reward. Thanks for checking in, and let's make it last call to breakfast. Anybody want to get in on the tail end of this thing? Nothing heard. Well, thank you. Big thank you to David, KB9EWG, Brett, KC2HA, and Paul, N1SEZ, and Roger, even though you've faded out into obscurity, you're here in spirit, okay, for hanging out with us. And thanks to everybody, too, who participated. I had a blast, and I hope you did, too. This has been SCARS VoIP, and SCARS VoIP net schedules and general information may be found on the scarsvoip.com website. Your net control for this session has been KC2GA. My name is Gary. I'm saying 73 and closing this VoIP session. Thank you for your participation. This net is now closed.
KC2GA, NO70.
NO70.
Hey, Gary. Hey, good net. Just want to let you know I'll go ahead and send the recording to Gordon's Dropbox at this time, so that would be off your plate. And hey, was a good TIN. Thanks. 73, take care. See you this weekend. KC2GA and the group in a 7.
Thank you, sir. I have a backup just in case, and you have yourself a good night. 73.
I want to echo that. Awesome TIN. Thank you there, Gary. Good job, and I definitely enjoyed it. KB9EWG.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and thanks for being there. 73.
Okay, Gary. That magnetic loop that I was... No, not the magnetic loop. The NFED J-pole does 1.4 SWR on 17 meters. Now I think it'll get you on the air. This is Fred, C2HA.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. I'm going to check that thing out. I mean, that might be a kind of a nice compromise instead of shelling out all that money for a loop, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much, and 73.
This is State L4NRM. Just a quick comment about J-poles. I've got copper J-pole for 2 meters, and during the summer month here I managed to make a contact all the way to Australia on 2 meters on SSB. Yeah, they're very, very good antennas. I'm quite tempted to make a bigger one for 6 meters. CL4ANORM listening in the group.
Hey, that's excellent. I know, well, I had a J-pole for years. I have two, and it always served me very, very well. We got, oh gosh, I never had any problem hitting anything I could hear, that's for sure. Yeah, I would definitely go ahead and try one on 6. I've heard they work very well.
Yeah, definitely. A few lengths of, in your language, it'll be 25 mil copper pipe. I'm just converting into, 25 mil would be inch, trying to convert it into imperial measurements. Yeah, copper pipe here, so I've got plenty of pipe, and I've got an oxy acetylene here, so I'll soon be able to braise something up together. Of course, we're right by the coast here, so it has to be built to withstand winds Yeah, J-Pole was my first ever antenna build, and you know, I've only been a ham since November last year, so I'm fairly new to this hobby, and really enjoying it over.
Well, that's excellent. You know, I wish you a lot of luck on getting that on that 6 meter job put together. I know it's been around for quite some time. 6 meter J-poles, you know, people have used them for it's kind of a, it's not really a standard, but it's there in the bag of tricks for a lot of folks. So it definitely works, and I concur. You know, I've always had great luck with a J-pole. You know, it's a great antenna to use when all else fails, or when you want something that will absolutely work, a J-pole will absolutely work. That's for sure. So I wish you luck with that. KC2GA.
Yeah, so 4NRM. Yeah, the other antenna that I've had really good luck with is I have a 40-meter delta loop antenna, and I can get all the way into Europe, into UK, all the way into America, South America, pretty much cover a whole world on 20 and 40 meters, which goes really, really well. It's a fantastic antenna as well.
Very nice. Yeah, that CHV5X I've got, I increased the height on it, and it really increased my coverage to Europe, and I'm going up another, going to try to get her up another 10 feet. 15 if I'm very lucky, but another 10 feet at least. And I think that's going to really, really just give me a fine amount of coverage into Europe. Right now, it's deep. Europe's been hard to get into from my location, for the past year and a half anyway. It's really been tough. But once I raised it up a little bit, I got some advantage on it. And I think we get a little more height on that, and we can compensate for any lousy conditions that are out there. So I'm kind of interested in seeing that. But once I can get back on 17, I think I'll just be a happy camper anyway. KC2GA.
Yes, it'll 4NRM. Yeah, 17 meters, I've never actually made a contact on, apart from FT8, I've never made a contact on 17 meters on voice yet. Just don't seem to hear anything on 17 meters, but whether my antenna will tune very well to that or not. It works okay on 10 meters. I've made contacts during the summer to Australia on 10 meters, but, you know, 10-meter bands, it's most of the time there's nothing there, and you get the occasional splutter this time of year, but it's pretty much nothing on 10 meters here. It's only been in the middle of winter down here. Usually about January, February, you've got about a month of openings during the day on 10 meters, but, another band I need to have a play with. My antenna is on a 10-meter scuttle pipe, so there's two of them, one on the other end, and it will probably be, that's probably about 30 foot near lingo off the ground, so it's as high as I can go and get away with it at the moment. Over.
Well, you know, it's like I always say, keep trying. I kept staring at that thing for months until I figured out I could get some more height on it, so sooner or later you'll get a flash of inspiration, and you'll be able to do something. I'm going to get my carcass out of here. It was great talking to you, and glad that you're aboard tonight. This is KC2GA saying 7-3.
7-3, and thank you very much for bringing it, and it was a very interesting topic. I was going to go and have some lunch myself, so it's 2:46 p.m. here Friday afternoon. So 7-3 to yourself and anyone else that's listening. This is CDL4 NORM signing clear.